Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
And welcome to another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Of course, I am your host, Jonathan Edwards, and with me, as always, the sword and fire to my severed Hydra head, Mr. Robert Lundgren. How the hell are you doing?
Hello, hello.
We're starting this episode off right.
Better than beginning. You, apparently. Wow. Wow.
I say that with love, though. I only sever the heads of those whom I love. Put that on my online dating profile when I was single.
Not at all awkward. Not at all awkward. All right. I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm not too bad myself. We're about to get frozen here in Texas. I don't know if you've seen the news, but it's going to be our third icy, snowy day of the year.
I know. I feel bad that I left when I did. I'm sorry. We could have huddled out the storm together, but no. I'm out here in breezy
Surrounded
Portland.
By the warmth of cardboard memories.
Yeah. And you know what's nice about your collection? If we get into a day after tomorrow type situation where we need
I'll
to burn
your
stuff.
Body. Exactly. That's so good of you to sacrifice yourself like that. You're a real team player. All right. Well, moving on. As always, we like to start off the episode with a big thank you to our patrons over at Patreon. You guys totally help us keep producing this show. We couldn't do it without you, and we really, truly appreciate it. A couple bucks goes a long way for us. That is the reality of it. And moving on to our Space Freaks contest. First of all, Robert, tell us how you screwed up.
Oh, man, I'm giggly today, and I don't know why.
No, that's a good thing.
It can't be. It's drying out my mouth, oddly. I'll have to go down and get
There's
coffee
a
at this
joke
rate.
In there, but I'm just going to leave that. That's an outtake.
Jonathan, you are in rare form today. Well, I said that we'd announce a contest winner in 34. Whoops, my bad. The contest will end in episode 34, but we won't announce anything till 35 because, you know, we record these and they come out a couple days later and I don't want to, like, you know, shave off anyone's time, blah, blah, blah. Whoops, my bad. So 34 it ends, 35 we announce a winner. So.
Don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to put a slap in a box and FedEx it over to Robert, who will then slap himself with it.
That sounds overly complicated.
It is, but that's half the fun.
Okay. I expect it now. I'm expecting the empty FedEx box from you. Maybe maybe with a empty. Picture of Dave Chappelle as what's his face, you know? Just five finger. What did five fingers say the hand? Or I forget. Five fingers say
slap.
The face.
Slap!
Slap! Yep. So.
We are looking for a very specific piece of information on this particular contest, right?
Yes. So this is your second chance to enter the contest. And this time we are asking the question, if you got into a Pokemon style battle, what would be in your Pokeball? What is the scariest monster that you would want in your Pokeball? Be it from a board game, from a comic book, from a miniature game, from an RPG, from a movie, from anything, anything you want. But we need a space scary monster that you would want as your Poke battle. So,
let me tell you, man, the game that we're going to be talking about later this episode, Mythic Battles Pantheon, is full of awesome, cool, scary monsters. So I've got a lot of this fresh in my head.
But you know what? You know what? I want it to be sci-fi. Sci-fi.
All monsters can go to space.
A space Hydra? You want it to be a space Hydra?
Space Hydra would actually be kind of cool. I'm not going to lie.
Space Zeus fights the space Hydra. Ah! Use the hashtag FMD contest, tweet at us at Forgot My Dice, tweet at Stronghold Games, and just say what monster you would want in your space Poke battle.
There's no reason not to enter. You could win a free game. At the very least, you're going to have a little bit of fun typing.
Yep.
So keep that in mind.
Keep that in mind. And we had a different question last episode, so you can enter twice. Double
yes,
your odds.
Yes, go back to episode 32 and take a listen, and you will know how to enter then.
Yep.
All right, Robert, well, without any further ado, it is time for us to dive into our off-the-shelf segment. This is, of course, the segment of our show where we talk about all the awesome stuff that we've managed to get off of our shelves and into our hearts on a very special episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Our cold black hearts grew three sizes that day.
Well, Robert, let's go ahead and get started with something basic. Let's get our reading out of the way. What have you been reading? I see a fairly long list here.
Yeah, it's been a reading week. It's been a heavy reading week, which is probably why I didn't get anything else done. Well, I read more of the Delta Green Handler's Guide. I've talked about it before. It still is fun. The new stuff, my buddy got in a copy of Xanathar's Guide to Everything, which he finished.
Which has been getting amazing reviews,
and all of my
friends that have it have been just swooning over it.
Yeah, he let me borrow it, and I've been reading it, and I can see why. It's quite good. I haven't gotten to the real interesting section yet, because I started reading that after I finished The Big Thing. I got my copy of Art of Magic the Gathering Ixalan in, and I was reading that, along with Planeshift Ixalan, because they came out pretty much the same day. I don't know if we're going to do a deep dive of this. I think I was going to talk you into it, or I was going to try, at least for the Planeshift PDF. So I will hold off my opinions till then, but
How does it stack up to the last two?
I didn't like it as much, and I've been trying to figure out why. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's like, just...
Well, send me a link to the PDF, and yeah, we can deep dive it. I'll be curious to see your thoughts, because I'd rather like the last two.
The plane shift is fine for what it is. I'm just talking about the setting in general, but... Well, you know, because our deep dive is usually more about the actual plane shift, which this doesn't count. The setting has a lot of cool ideas, but they don't quite gel together, because you've got a pirate faction, you've got a merfolk faction, you've got a Aztecs and dinosaurs faction, and you got
ripped straight from the annals of history,
right? And then you've got the Catholic Church mixed with vampire faction, the conquistadors that are all vampires, and individually,
wow, there's no political commentary there at all.
No, but
none whatsoever.
But that's the thing. Like, individually, all of those things are really cool ideas, but it just doesn't... It does seem like a
mishmash, just from the 30,000-foot view. I'm not saying it doesn't work, because I haven't read it, but it does seem like a really odd mix of styles.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I like all the individual components. Like, they're all interesting, especially the pirates and the vampire conquistadors. Like, I was digging their storyline quite a bit, but I don't know. It just didn't gel right. Like, I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. I'm going to think about it harder, and maybe I can articulate it better when we do the plane shift. But they don't.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. We will revisit this as a group, I promise.
Yeah. And hopefully in 2 weeks I can get my thoughts together better about it. So we'll see. But yeah. So that's what I've been reading. And the Ixalan book was not short. And there's a lot of cool fluff in there. And like I said, I really liked, especially
those art books are really good that way.
Yeah. Well, the pirates and the vampire conquistadors in particular are very, very interesting and cool. And it's the first magic setting where the world is very large, because they get into this weird thing sometimes where it's like Innistrad. Like, is the four provinces of Innistrad, is that it? Is there more? Is there, you know, or is that it? And they don't really ever say, and a lot of them get, like, Kaladesh was the same way. Kaladesh is a very, very small area, all things considered, and since a plane is supposed to be like an entire planet, what they give you of Kaladesh is very, very small, but this one is like, you know, basically South America, actually with a fair amount of North America mixed in, because there's a lot of canyons and coolness that they depict on the art, which is fun. And then they also mention that, you know, there's a pseudo-Europe, which these vampire conquistadors have taken over at this point. And, you know, there's all this other stuff.
Again,
so it feels like a world.
No political commentary whatsoever.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, I liked all the individual pieces. It just didn't quite fit right. I guess that's the best way I could put it. If I could put my finger on why it's not quite fitting right, I'll try to come up with it. But I can't. It's not coming to mind right now why it's not working. But all the individual components are good. Like, that art book is very, very stealable for, like, your homebrew campaign. Because, like, if you need a, you know, pseudo-fantasy South America, yeah, like, you could just steal Ixalan whole hog. And then that whole notion of the vampire conquistadors taking over the pseudo-Europe, it's very cool and well thought out. And the whole, like, the way the church and the nobility get intermingled with vampirism, it's really cool. And they would make a very cool antagonist in a setting, you know? And maybe not even an antagonist, because they're not exactly bad. They're just... Vampires.
So, I'm going to cut you off because I think you're spending too much time on this if we're going to do a deep dive.
Okay. I will try to come up with something better about why it doesn't gel for later. Okay.
Got to get on that Aquanet. Don't even know what I'm saying anymore. All right, moving right along.
Did you read anything, Jonathan?
Yeah, actually, oddly enough, I have been reading. It's page-turning and riveting if you are a plane junkie like me. I have been reading the training manual from the U.S. Marine Corps on Harrier operations. And
I don't know why I get so much detached amusement with with your DCS world. But
I'm so into it. I've been staying up till almost 2 in the morning flying with the West Coast guys from about 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. every night. I don't know how it is that I'm still conscious, but I'm making it happen.
It explains your word salad very well. Got a little bit of it. You got a little bit of word salad today, Jonathan. I'm just saying.
I'm so tired. All right. Well, let's use that as a transition to get into the world of video games. Robert, what have you been playing? Hold on, let me guess. Overwatch?
No, Destiny 2. Still Destiny 2.
Okay, that was my second guess. I had a 50-50 shot there. I just took a random one.
Yeah, I've been playing a little bit of the SNES Classic, but it's annoying because babies like playing with cords.
Yeah.
So I can only do it when they're not awake, and that window is very narrow. But I'm almost done. With the Curse of Osiris, it's kind of sad. So hopefully the faction rally will bring me new things to do. But I ground out a whole bunch of guns, and that was fun. And now I'm just playing PvP for the sake of playing PvP, because I don't know why I like Destiny PvP, but I do. I solo queue
that. It's fun. I was having fun with it.
I solo queue it all the time, and I complain. And then my guild, like they all, or my clan, whatever, they all stopped playing, and so now I'm like contemplating, do I go look for another guild? Because I'm kind of antisocial, but I actually knew those guys, but now none of them are playing, and it's kind of upsetting, so I don't know what's going on.
I'm in that same boat. Destiny just didn't have the legs for me again.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. I wish there were people I could play with.
I enjoyed it when I played it, without a doubt. It just didn't have legs. It just didn't have legs.
All right, what are you playing?
Well,
we should have segued right into DCS world.
That's right. I'm still addicted to the Harrier. Pre-purchase went up for the F-18. You know I'm doing it. It's just a matter of when. Yeah, no, I've been playing with a great group of guys. I'm in an online squadron, the 59th Ravens. They're super nice guys. Everybody works together. Everybody helps bring each other up to speed on stuff. And it's just been fun. It's really, really super fun. They're a good bunch of folks to fly with, and it's just been a blast. Did I tell you that I got some track IR for my computer?
What?
Have you ever heard of track IR?
No.
So, you mount an IR sensor at the top of your monitor, mm-hmm. and then you wear a hat, and on the bill of the hat, you attach this little headset. It's a little metal headset that has three reflective points on it,
mm-hmm.
and it tracks your head movement and exaggerates it. So, turning your head, say, 30 degrees to the left is like turning your head 150 degrees to your left in the game, and it allows you to look around the cockpit. It's kind of like a more inexpensive VR, so to speak. So my lovely wife got it for me for Christmas, and I have
you know
been
what I feel like you know
night.
What I feel like I feel like I'm Steve Irwin, and I'm just like watching you. It's like, oh, and look, there's the wild Jonathan as he plays DCS World. Notice how his small head inclinations churn the screen. And
how dare you? Because you know what? You're sitting there reading like everything Ixalan, everything Planeswalker every other quarter.
But what I'm saying is it shouldn't amuse me so much to hear stories about DCS World, but they tickle me pink, and I don't know why. I don't know why, but it's funny.
It's no different than you and Destiny and your search for a new group of.
But
of,
you're not amused by it. I am like seriously amused by all these stories, and I get these like images in my head of you sitting there with like kind of a manic expression on your face, wearing this goofy ass hat, and it's red in my mind for some reason. It's this red trucker's cap with these really dumb reflective things on the front, because that's the image I got in my head. I don't care what it is in real life. And
I wear my '80s. Throwback Padres hat, Padres for life. And I slip that sucker onto the bill, and I do not have a manic expression. In fact, I probably look really, really mean, a bit like an asshole, because I am concentrating so hard, and I do suffer from an intense case of resting bitch face. So I might just sit there looking really angry because I'm thinking really hard.
The picture you're painting is better than I imagined.
Well, if you want to see what it looks like to be in DCS, go to the 59th Ravens Facebook page. We're constantly posting screenshots of our exploits. I have no idea why I'm even sharing all this. I feel like this is just bait for people to give me crap, but that's all right.
You should Twitch just your face playing.
I think only you would be amused by that.
I would watch it for days. I mean, it's like that.
Maybe I'll set up a special Twitch stream just for you. Nice. Maybe we'll give it to the Patreon subscribers.
Did you hear
watch
about
Jonathan's
in Australia
face while he concentrates really hard playing DCS?
Did you hear about in Australia? Some TV station mounted a camera onto a train that had a 37-hour trip from southern Australia through the center up to northern Australia, and they just broadcast it live.
That's pretty amazing.
That's you. It's just you with this intense stare. And
if you guys want to see a Twitch stream of me staring intently at the screen while I try not to curse too badly, let us know. I will gladly subject myself to this.
Please, people, make it happen.
It's up to the audience.
Whoa. Should we set that as our first goal on the Patreon?
20 subscribers, and you can watch me mutter.
It's by dollar value.
$20.
$20. Okay. I'm going to write that down. Okay.
And I'll say right now, if we hit $30 on the Patreon, I will gladly DM for you. Or teach you how to fly. Either way, whatever you want. All right. Well, moving right along.
Writing that down. I'm going to put that in later tonight.
Sounds good. All right. Well, so my kids all pooled their money, all four of them, and they ended up buying a Nintendo Switch.
Lucky.
And I allowed this to happen under the single rule that Dad gets to play Zelda. So
that's all I want to play.
Zelda
I don't want to buy a system just to get that game, but I want that game.
Well, let me tell you, it's been a while since I've played a Zelda game that I didn't loathe. And let me explain where that comes from. You know, I'm an old school Zelda player. I've been playing Zelda for a long time, and Zelda stopped feeling fresh. It just felt like the exact same Ocarina of Time redo over and over and over. There was a tiny exception with Wind Waker. I thought Wind Waker felt fresh and new and exciting.
Until you had to go hunt down all those stupid Triforce pieces in the ocean. Oh my God.
Nah, that never
God.
Bugged me. I was so happy doing
working
that.
Working at 200
so
rupees to go ask that weirdo for where's this map, and then going and doing something stupid. And if you had the guide and you knew where they were, like I went to two of them and I couldn't get them for some reason, and maybe I'm just dumb, but I didn't make it past that. I was playing that game happily until I hit that wall. I have had no problems whatsoever,
and I've been having an absolute blast.
Mr. Tingle. Do you remember Mr.
Tingle? Yeah, I didn't like Mr. Tingle, I gotta say.
Anyway, sorry.
But no, this is the first time that Zelda has felt like a truly new experience. This is a different direction for Zelda. Now, if I'm going to compare it to all of the open world games that we've enjoyed on other systems, it's behind the curve. Because it's Nintendo, and they're always behind the curve. They make amazing, wonderful games, but they have a specific formula that they stick to. They are branching out and trying new things. And it's things that we've seen in other games. But they do it in such a charming fashion that it feels new. And you know, it's so good to be back in Hyrule. And it feels great. And this is the most fun I've had with a Zelda game since 2006. And I think that says a lot.
I'm looking forward to the N64 Classic, though, man, because I've never finished Majora's Mask, and I'd really like to scratch that off my bucket list.
You know, I did not care for Majora's Mask.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I want to, like, hate play it, because I don't like it either, but I want to beat it.
That's about how I feel about it. Except I didn't want to play it. I just hated it.
Well, and it uses my favorite MacGuffin of time travel. I love time travel, so I don't know. Anyway, and you played have you been playing Mario Odyssey, I see?
Yes, I have been playing Mario Odyssey, which is also lovely and fun, and I fully understand why it's getting the reviews that it is, because it is absolutely just fantastic, the way it's constructed. And it's also been fun to watch the kids playing together. And they all four sit around the TV and they take turns playing. And it's funny because they're all kind of coaching each other through the levels. and they're all having equal amounts of fun. It's just been a really interesting experience. The one thing that the Nintendo console does so well that Xbox and PlayStation just failed to do for whatever reason is bring kids together. And I just don't understand what the difference is there. I don't know if it's the gameplay or some magic that Nintendo makes, but they do it, and I appreciate it.
I like the cut of your jib. Maybe I'll have to get one. Maybe when the boys are older. Maybe the Switch U, I guess.
I don't know. Like I said, I've been having a great time with it, and Dad's been getting his fix, so I guess that makes it all worthwhile.
Cool. Speaking of fix,
that's about it for,
speaking of fix,
for video games.
I saw Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yay! We can talk about movies and TV.
And you know what's funny? That episode where you talked about it, I just took my headphones off while I was editing. So if it sounds like I stopped editing or if you said something weird, I just didn't even listen to it.
Did you go back and listen to it since you watched it?
No, actually, I have not.
You fool. This is your job. Get to work.
I haven't had the time.
How dare you?
Well, I listened to an episode because I'm like, oh, this is where we talked about it. And I popped that one in while I was on a drive. And then we got I got through Off the Shelf and we didn't talk about it. I'm like, oh, it must have been the episode before that. Whoops.
what did you think without spoilers? Because, you know, there's probably still a lot of folks that haven't watched it.
I'll just issue the spoiler warning because I don't care. So watching it, I had problems, and it was the thing they hung the story off of. I didn't like the whole story with the A plot with the ship trying to get away. It felt like it was like, for everything that was going on around it, it felt like it took place over too short of a period of time, and that part of it kind of wasn't just right. I don't know how to explain it. I just didn't like the framing device. But all the B plots with, you know, people going off and doing other things like Rey and Luke and Finn and Rose, and I think those were all the side plots. Those were great. Like I loved watching those. Those were great plots.
Don't forget Rey and Kylo.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Rey and Luke and Rey and Kylo. Yeah. I thought those plots were great. I watched this video that I think it was Wisecrack did. Okay, it was like deliberately trying to subvert your expectations of what a Star Wars film could be. It was basically the plot of Empire, like at its bare bones. But at every turn, they decided to mess with you.
But see, I like that.
Yeah, no, I have an appreciation for that as well.
For the first time in a long, long time.
It wasn't the best Star Wars movie I've ever seen, but I will give it credit for going in a new direction.
Now here's the trick, and this is what I always tell folks. And I know you're not in a position to be able to exercise on this yet, but this is a movie that really, truly rewards multiple watches. It's almost required because it's so dense. There's so much going on, and you have to be able to kind of put the foreground away because you'll need to know the plot and the happenings so that you can truly enjoy the depth of stuff that they packed in there.
Anyway, I'll buy it when it comes out on video, but until then, I'm not going to be able to do that, unfortunately. So
hold tight. Hold tight for a final judgment until then.
Don't get me wrong, I didn't hate it. It was not prequel bad. It was a very good movie, and I appreciate a good trolling. So, and I like that it's divisive, you know? I like that people hate it because it means it did something, you know?
It forced people to think, which instantly makes it an interesting movie.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, most of the gripes that people have, I actually don't necessarily disagree with, but from what little I've seen about people who didn't like the movie, they seem to dislike things that the movie wasn't, you know, like it mostly hinges on Luke. Most of the ones I see that aren't, you know, blatantly sexist, it mostly hinges on Luke and that the fact that he's not a big damn hero in this and that they felt like he wouldn't have withdrawn like that. I could agree with that. I don't think it entirely fits his character, but I think it's an interesting thing to say. That, you know, I mean, in essence, Luke is like that guy who played high school football and, you know, won the big game. And everybody was like, oh, that's that guy who won the big game. And now, like 30, 40 years later, he's just an abject failure. I don't know. I that doesn't seem Star Wars, but that's sometimes life. And it just seemed like, yeah, sometimes when you're a hero, that's all you do. And then after that, you don't have anything left. You know, I don't know. I don't know what I was trying to say about that, but it was at least interesting. It was at least saying something, and it was saying something you didn't expect out of a Star Wars movie, because he's supposed to be the chosen one, you know? It's not like in a normal movie they would let that go like that, but that's when they did, and it's like, what the hell is going on? You know, I don't know. Anyway, I'll repeat view. We'll find out.
I'm looking forward to it.
So, speaking of Star Wars, there's a show on Netflix called The Toys That Made Us. And it's
I really want to watch this, so don't spoil it too much, because I'm very interested to watch
it. If you know anything about the Star Wars toys, you know about the history. The thing, I will put a caveat on this, it is about children's toys. Those documentaries are not for kids. I made the mistake of watching the Barbie one, and I know you can't talk about the history of Barbie without talking about sexism. Like, you just can't. I get that. I was not expecting them to put the sexism around Barbie in such precise language. You know, like talking about how they felt her, how shall I put it kindly? People felt that her bust was too large, but they did not use any of those words. They used the more vulgar words to describe it.
I gotcha.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and they drop F-bombs. Like, I was watching the He-Man one, and, you know, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you can imagine it, but the guys who made, like, roided up He-Man and all that, they're kind of cussing, swearing, air quotes, manly dudes. So yeah, there's some language on the He-Man episode that I was not expecting that many F-bombs dropped about He-Man. So yeah, no, it's an interesting series, don't get me wrong, but it is not for the kids viewing. The He-Man one was just language, but some of the other ones, like the Barbie one, got into sexism in a way I'm like, I don't think this is how I wanted to expose my daughter to what sexism is. So we had to turn that off.
I am totally stoked about watching this. So say no more, because I really want to watch it.
Yeah, no, it's raw. Like, I will give it that. You know, it's the toy makers in their own words and in words fitting of the time. So you really get a sense of the history. The Barbie episode actually in particular was really interesting because of that. And oddly, the one that was the least interesting was Star Wars out of all of them. Like, it's like they sucker you, because the Star Wars one is very kind of what you think it would be, because most of the people who were involved in the Star Wars stuff were, like, you know, nice nerdy guys that, you know, weren't bad people or anything, and there's not a lot of, like, controversy surrounding the original, you know, the original Star Wars or anything. And but then the next episode's Barbie, and I'm like, whoa, I was not expecting that. Any TV for you, sir?
A little bit. I have finished Longmire, the last season. I thought it actually ended very appropriately. It's one of the best endings to a TV show I've ever seen, which is really saying something, because generally people don't know how to end a TV show, and it's just awkward and uncomfortable. Looking at you, Seinfeld. Looking at you.
So the bar for me, I think, is All Good Things from Star Trek The Next Generation. Where is this in relation to that bar?
It's up there. It's up there. Maybe even a little beyond, because one of the things that's characterized Longmire from start to finish in all six seasons is how well they have evolved the characters. And this ends on such a note of that change and of learning from your mistakes. And that's always been the hallmark of that show. So I'm very impressed. I'm very, very impressed by how it ends. And then I also started on The Punisher.
Oh, I still haven't watched that.
Well, let me tell you, I'm three episodes in. This is simultaneously the best and the hardest to watch Marvel show, I think, that I've seen yet. And it's one of the best and hardest to watch TV shows that I've seen. And this is by no stretch of the imagination a dissertation on how bad it is. It's actually an expertly woven TV show. It's difficult because the characterization of the Punisher is so raw and so close to home and so realistic that it can be difficult to watch because you are feeling the emotions that that character must be going through. And as, you know, a father of four and as a husband and just, you know, having a family, sometimes the way they breach material just hurts. It just hurts.
Nice.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible television. And don't ever, ever, ever let anybody get turned off to this TV show just because it happens to be a comic book character. That's not what this show is about. This show is basically an exercise on, you know, what can PTSD do to a human being, and how are veterans being affected by the things that they do and see. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's wonderful TV.
Wow. I need to watch that.
It's much deeper and more impactful than it has any right to be, or that I think anybody expected it to be.
Okay. Definitely moving up my list.
Yes. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. I cannot wait to hear your thoughts.
All right, Jonathan, let's do this, buddy. Board games, go.
Anything for you?
No. I've been all reading.
Right. We're going to start with the easy stuff and move on up. So been having some friends over pretty regularly on Thursdays. You know Dale very well. Our buddy Cohen, Cohen's been bringing his friend April. It's been a really nice meeting. Every so often, our other buddy Jared gets to join us. And the other night, we had a chance to go through Werewolves, a couple of rounds of Werewolf, which is a really nice social game if you've never played it. It's Hidden Roles. We had an opportunity.
Werewolf the way you spelled it? W-E-A-R, like you're wearing a wolf?
No, that's typos. W-E-R-E.
Oh, you're just stupid. Okay. Go on.
Wow. I just, you know, it's funny. I was looking at my desk drawer right here, and I had this large order of suck it I wanted to give you. So, yeah, we got a couple of rounds of Werewolf in. Werewolf ended up being quite the fun little game. I'd never played it before, and it's a good little social game. Not very deep, but that's the joy of it. And we actually played with the app, which does a lot of the narration for you, and I think that makes life a lot easier with that game. Played a lot of Mythic Battles Pantheon lately in preparation for today's discussion. And we also got a bunch of rounds of Joking Hazard in. So it's basically Cards Against Humanity with dirty pictures from Cyanide and Happiness, and it's good times. I taught Dale how to play Jaipur, and I've been playing Jaipur with some of my coworkers, which has been fun. And speaking of coworkers, I've taken a couple games to work, and lately we've been playing Splendor and Patchwork. And I don't think we've talked about Patchwork yet on the show. It's a fun game. You actually have a bunch of quilt pieces arranged in a circle around a board that represents time. And players take their take turns either moving the time forward to collect buttons, which is the currency, or moving the time forward because you have purchased, using that currency, different pieces of your quilt. And the object is to try and get as close as you can to building a full 7x7 quilt out of these different pieces. Think Tetris, right? Everything's shaped a little bit differently, and you're trying to fill out your quilt.
I've heard of this game, and I don't know why. And
it's Uwe Rosenberg. It's very well done. It plays very, very quickly, and it's an absolute blast to play. I've been having a really good time with it, and so is everybody at work. So it says something that I can take this to work with me and get a bunch of non-gamers playing very quickly. It's just that kind of game. But it's got the depth that a gamer of the level that you're listening to a podcast is going to appreciate.
Nice.
And then got a chance to play El Dorado. Dale brought El Dorado, and that was, of course, I believe it was either a Spiel des Jahres nominee or a winner last year. And that game is lovely. It's a game where adventurers are racing through the jungle. Think Indiana Jones or the Uncharted games. And you're doing this racing using a deck-building mechanic. You start out with a basic deck, and then you're purchasing new cards that let you get through the jungle and the different environments a little quicker. It's a clever mechanic. There's a lot going on, and it's super, super fun.
Nice.
And then finally, I managed to get my hands on a copy of Dinosaur Island, which is basically Jurassic Park, the board game, and it is sublime. I am having so much fun with this game. I mean, I spent the entire time I was playing it just humming to myself, na 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 na.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it's a dinosaur.
No, it's so, so much fun. The game's played over several phases. Each phase is equally as easy as the previous one. Some phases you're interacting with the other player as you guys are bidding against stuff and trying to grab stuff from each other. Other phases are just you doing your own worker placement based on what you have available to you. There's enough variation in the components that come with it that every time you play, it's going to be a little bit different. And there's even a solo play mixed in, which I have not yet had a chance to play. I'm fully planning on doing that this weekend.
Nice.
So yeah, Dinosaur Island so far has been absolutely sublime. I really just madly in love with it, and I highly recommend it already.
Anything else?
No, I think that brings us to the end of Off the Shelf.
That's good, because this weather is playing havoc with our technology.
It's not going to be a good night. Well, that brings us to the end of our Off the Shelf segment. We will be back in a short moment after a short break, where we are going to be talking about Wisdom of Crowds, which is our tabletop news segment. So, Robert, we'll see you in a moment.
Bye, Jonathan. I got nothing.
We We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fmdpodcast.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at forgotmydice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on Twitter. Find us at Forgot My Dice.
You can join us on Patreon, where we post outtakes and other bonus content.
And if you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give Forgot My Dice a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Store.
Lastly, for those of you who want control to sanction the podcast, pick up your shoe phone and call Agent 82. Chief, it's acceptable to get podcasts on our wristwatches. It won't be distracting.
I just don't even know what's happening right now.
Well, it's classified, Jonathan. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Oh, we've got to get these things upgraded from the 1960s. And we're back from the break. And now it's time for our Wisdom of Crowds segment. This, of course, is our tabletop news segment. And first up in the news, probably one of my most favorite stories of the year, and I know it's not that deep into the year, but you know what, I'm just saying it. It's time to talk about one of my favorite games of the last few years, and that is
15 days into the year. 15. And this is it?
Yeah, well,
this is the year's going to peak right here. Is that what you're saying?
It might. Who knows, right?
Okay.
But this is one of my most favorite games of the last few years. We talk about it all the time here on the show, and that is Scythe. And it is getting its final expansion, The Rise of Fenris. And this is a really interesting expansion, Robert, because it really kind of turns Scythe up on its end. Scythe is a worker placement Euro game wrapped up in this beautiful, beautiful art style, and now it's getting an expansion that is all about the campaign.
Mm-hmm. And from the press release I've been reading, it's not just about the campaign; it's also much more about being a legacy game. So it's got a lot of legacy style elements, except, you know, you can reboot it after you're done. But it'll apparently have like a lot of envelopes with different cards that come up based off of circumstances and such, but they won't make you destroy anything so that it can't be replaced.
And it comes with a lot of stuff. 13 miniatures, 62 tokens made out of wood, 2 new custom dice, a bunch of tiles, some cardboard tokens, and of course the episodic guidebook. And what's really neat is you can use it for the 1-5 base game, or you can even use it with the Invaders from Afar expansion and go up to 7 players, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it sounds really interesting. And if it were anybody else than Jamie Stegmaier, I might be nervous, but I'm not.
I'm not at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, no.
I'm not at no. all. I mean, this is just super exciting news, and I cannot wait.
Well, and depending how deep he goes into the legacy element, it'll be interesting, you know, because on one hand, it could just be more like a campaign thing, but if he really kind of figures out how to bridge that gap between, you know, you're a normal air quotes board game and a legacy style board game where you can put an expansion in and get kind of that legacy experience with a game that you already like, there's a lot of potential there for other companies to sort of pick up that idea and run with it. Hopefully it's good and he sets that bar real, real high so other people will try to reach for it, because, you know, anybody making a good board game just encourages other people to make good ones too.
Now let's turn our news lens towards FFG and their brand new RPG system, Genesis, which we've talked about here on the show before. It is, of course, the same system that is powering the core of the Star Wars RPG, and you can even further trace back its roots to the Warhammer Fantasy RPG that Fantasy Flight used to publish. And that, of course, is the Genesis system. And what's new in the Genesis world?
They have announced that they're releasing a book called Realms of Terranoth. I think that's how you say it. And if Terranoth...
Yes, that is, of course, the world that powers so many FFG games. Descent, Rune Wars, RuneScape. It's basically the FFG fantasy setting.
And they say this could also be used as kind of a generic fantasy book, but it is going to be focused around their own in-house fantasy setting. So yeah, they finally will have an RPG for Descent, you can use your Descent stuff in the role-playing. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
Good.
I was going to mention it if you didn't.
Yeah, oh no, it's such a good crossover.
And there's so much good Descent stuff to choose from, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't have anything bad to say about it, other than the fact that I still don't own a copy of the rule book, because I'm my backlog of stuff that I've gotten through Kickstarters and stuff is so extensive. I'm kind of taking a break from buying new stuff to slog through some of that, because otherwise it'll never get off my shelf of opportunity.
I haven't been able to find it. It's been sold out.
Oh, wow. Well, I've had my eye on the PDF that's on DriveThruRPG, but I've got such a backlog, I'm just taking a break to go through some of that stuff. So I just need to get Genesis. I just do. I just need to read it.
It's such a cool system, man. You're going to love it so much. It's so, so, so much fun.
Nice. Well, speaking of fantasy, we got two news bites from 5th edition D&D here. The first one is Wizards has fired up the Unearthed Arcana PDFs in the new year. They took December off for, I don't know, the holidays. I'm not sure why they did it. If there even was a reason besides they just didn't want to do it, and I don't blame them. They have a lot of work. And they released three new class archetypes, and I liked all of them. I read this one, and I was like, this is amazing. The first one is the Circle of Spores, which is fungus druids, and it's awesome because it's so gross. It's so... fungus druids. I love it. It's got some good mechanics. They have one called the Brute Fighter, which is another fighter in the long line of I am a fighter and I want to stand around and smack stuff. And I can't. Oh, this is the best part. It's the stand around and hit stuff fighter. But mechanically, I think it's much better than the current champion, because the champion fighter kind of sucks. Dad pun up high. Anybody?
You're standing alone on this one. That one hurt.
Yeah.
That had a physical reaction to it. And it was not something we can talk about on air.
And then rounding it out, they have the Inventor Wizard, which is a wizard that gets funky steampunk magical armor. And they got some good stuff, but I like kind of they're sort of the Inventor Wizard, you know, like I got gadgets. I don't know. It was kind of stupid, but it was kind of a fun little wizard school. So overall, good return to form wizards. I'm looking forward to seeing if those continue on. I give high marks to all of them. They were all kind of fun and silly and interesting in their own way. And last but not least, for 5th edition, we got more info on the Into the Borderlands book that Goodman Games is going to come out with. I don't remember when we talked about this. I think it was our Gen Con.
That's a ways back.
It was Gary Con. They said they announced it at Gary Con, and Gary Con was right around Gen Con. So yeah, it was like August.
Yeah.
So Goodman Games, basically what they're doing is they're grabbing the first two original in-the-box D&D modules, B1, Journey into the Unknown, and B2, Keep on the Borderlands, and they are reprinting them. So the book has full reprints of the original modules, which sounds impressive until you realize they're 16 pages and a map, because there was not a lot of plot back then. Then they are doing a clean 5th edition conversion of both of those. So there you go. Okay, conversioning, that's good. And then for each one, they're also adding an extra chapter of extra encounters and maybe hopefully extra plot, because again, light on plot. But yeah, just extra bonus content that you can play with that. And they are going to have a final chapter that adds in all of the new monsters, all of the new magic items, all of that new fun, crunchy goodness. That'll be in a chapter in the back, and it'll be its own stuff. Currently, this sucker is clocking in at 368 pages.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I never played Into the Unknown, but Keep on the Borderlands is just that classic. I almost decided to convert that for Unity. Like it's just one of those weird classic modules where you go run around and kill monsters and have to deal with weird stuff. I don't know. It's a fun little adventure. It was my first experience just how to sort of create a sort of zoomed in campaign setting, you know, because you get like the basics. It's like, here are the caves with the monsters and here's the keep where you live. And then here's these two other points, like this mound with lizard folk and this old mad hermit and blah, blah, blah. And it's just a nice little area. And then you sort of expand off of it. And I think it's the first example of sort of that method of coming up with your own campaign setting. And yeah, it was relevant, you know, 30 years ago when I read it for the first time, and hopefully it'll be relevant with 5th edition. So look for that coming out soon. TM, probably, would Gen Con be Blizzard soon, I think?
I don't know. I do not know the answer to
that. Yeah, I have a feeling this is Gen Con, so I don't think that's real soon. Real soon, to me, feels like a month or two, so I'll go with Blizzard soon, but not Valve soon. Valve soon would be like years.
All right, you ready for a new segment, Robert?
What?
Are you ready for a new segment? This is a surprise for you.
Yeah.
I call it News Bites.
News Bites? Is this like Pizza Bites, where you eat one and you're ultimately unfulfilled, and next thing you know, you've eaten several thousand calories worth and you feel ashamed?
These are little bites of stories that are coming up right now, but don't necessarily have a lot of detail around them.
Okay. Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay, go.
Fantasy Flight has introduced in-store organized play for Legends of the Five Rings, the card game.
I heard about that. I haven't seen anybody run it yet.
No, either have I, which is why it's kind of still developing. But it's cool that it's there, and I know a lot of people are really excited about that LCG. I've got several friends that are playing it and threatening to make me jump over the edge into it, so we'll see how that goes. Speaking of LCGs, there's been a new upgrade expansion for the Arkham Horror, the card game, that's been released. It's got all kinds of new stuff in it. More details to come very soon. Looking at the picture, it's nifty. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I cannot wait to dig into it.
Nice.
Did you hear what Target is doing for game designers?
No.
It has invited them to the 115th International Toy Fair. That's taking place in February in New York City. And they have this thing called the Open Innovation Project. Some of the designers might have their design selected to present to Target executives at that fair.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Target's really, really, really behind the board game industry right now, which is just neat.
I would agree. And if they're starting to sort of develop their own stuff for the stores, that is fascinating, to be honest.
And then finally, two new expansions have been released for the Raiders of the North Sea franchise. You've got Hall of Heroes and Fields of Fame. If you're familiar with Raiders of the North Sea, these are fantastic games. There's three in the series. And these expansions, I believe, if I recall correctly, will actually jump back and forth between all three games in the series.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's News Bites.
No, I got one for you, although this isn't a bite.
Uh-oh.
I forgot to put this in, but we'll do it now. We'll call it a bite. It's more like a light snack.
This is dessert.
Yeah.
This is dessert.
This is dessert. So on January 29th, Monty Cook will turn 50 years old.
Happy birthday, Monty!
Yes, so on the Saturday, the 27th, which this should come out before then, they want fans of the Monty Cook to play a Monty Cook game. Doesn't have to be his new one. You could play Cypher System or Strange or, you know, his new stuff, but you can go back in time. You can play his old Planescape adventures, his old Iron Crown Enterprises adventures, anything. Just play something Monty Cook. And they are going to have something where if you submit it to them... Oh, yeah, and he wrote HeroClix. The original rules for HeroClix were him.
There you go.
So anyway, if you let them know about their game on their RSVP page and send them some photos and stuff, you can get rewards. And they haven't said what the rewards will be, but they said it'll be... They said something about a commemorative pin. So there you go. I'm already racking my brain. I'm like, what can I run that is short and sweet for Monty Cook randomly on Saturday the 27th? Because I know my HeroClix did not make the move, so I'm going to have to find something else. But yeah, there you go. Happy birthday, Monty. Go play a game of his on the 27th.
Happy birthday, Monty.
Get a pin. It's free. Come on. Do it. Take pictures. It'll be fun.
All right. Well, that brings us, of course, to our last segment of this part of the show, and that is A Year in the Life. It's our segment where we look into what we deep dove a year ago, and we have 365 seconds to talk about it again. And if we want to go longer, well... frankly, that means that we need to take it off the shelf. So,
episode 9, so Shatnery, we had our 2017 predictions, which we talked about last episode. Moving on.
And wait. Who won?
Don't make me start the clock.
Say it.
You won.
Say it.
I said it. You can't say we're having technical difficulties. I said it.
just need to get that in. Just a little.
And
bit.
I'm starting the clock.
Taste.
And episode 10, Gnomes Come Out and Play. We did Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. So, spoiler alert, I don't own that game. So, no, I have not had it out. However, Jonathan, you do. I played your copy. Did we play it after we reviewed it?
I have played the living daylights out of Mansions of Madness. In fact, I'm staring at a copy of the latest expansion, Streets of Arkham, and I cannot wait to get this expansion into my copy. This game gets a lot of play, and it just is aging so very, very, very well. This game is amazing.
Yeah, I'm jelly.
You live very close to Mike Hall, and Mike Hall has this game. You should hit him up and ask him for a game night.
He invited me to a game night, or he said he would, but he hasn't yet.
This is a perfect opportunity for you to get yourself into some Mansions of Madness.
Yeah. Mike Hall, if you're listening out there, buddy, I want to play that game so bad.
Yeah, that game
is
so good.
I mean, like, me over to play that game.
I don't need 365 seconds to talk about this game. It's the perfect blend of board gaming with a little bit of electronic storytelling to kind of help it along. It's phenomenally balanced. It's extremely fun to play. Every time you play, the variety just kind of just shows itself again and just shows you just how much there is in that box in terms of content. And I love it. I love everything about this game. It comes out regularly, probably more than any other game on my shelf, and it's amazing.
I really want to play the game, Mike. Please. Please. I'm crying. I'm going to collect myself.
Is there anything left to say about this one?
No. No.
Yeah. This is one of the few games that I will gladly tell you, you will be hard-pressed to find somebody that I think is not going to find enjoyment in it. Just go out and grab it. This is a keeper. This is an amazing, wonderful, phenomenal game.
Yeah. Yeah. Seconds. Like, yeah, what you said, only more so.
Well, that brings us to the end of a year in the life, which means that we are also at the end of Wisdom of Crowds, and it's time for another short break. We will be back in just a few moments with our deep dive, Mythic Battles Pantheon.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. And welcome back from that short break. It is now time for our deep dive segment. And in today's deep dive, we're approaching it from a slightly different angle, Robert.
Yeah, yeah. Trying something new. So let us know how this goes. Because, see, before, I used to live 5 minutes from Jonathan. So I would just run over and we would play games. And it was glorious. But now I live 5 days away from Jonathan. And, yeah, a little hard to do that. Although, you know, fingers crossed, I got a thing maybe in Austin at the end of the year. So hopefully, but yeah, doesn't help us now. So what we're going to do here is Jonathan has played our deep dive game, because he has a Kickstarter addiction, Mythic Battles Pantheon, and he got all the bells and whistles for it, I'm sure. And I'm sure I'm very, very jelly. I want to crest those minis and hold them.
They are pretty awesome. The
minis are
pretty awesome. I love them.
Yeah. And then,
but this game is so much more than a looker, Robert.
Yeah, so we're gonna try to review it. It's more gonna be Jonathan's gonna review it. I will be your surrogate. So hopefully I will ask questions that you are thinking. It's like, oh, I wonder if this is the case. Hopefully that will then come out of my mouth like magic. Like magic. That's what we're going for here. If it doesn't work, if we need to do anything better, if you have any feedback on it, if you don't want us to ever do it again, just let us know. We're gonna probably not listen to you if you say never do it again, because we'll fool around with this notion for a little bit, I'm sure. But oh, and I want to preface this here, because of the snowpocalypse coming, Skype has not been our friend tonight. So if this turns out real, real bad, I'm gonna blame that at first. It wasn't our fault, baby. It was Skype. It was the storm. It was the storm of the century.
All right, so let's talk Mythic Battles Pantheon.
Hold up. I gotta do my thing. In Mythic Battles Pantheon, Hera, tired of Zeus's infidelity, decides to take her revenge and releases the Titans on Mount Olympus. In the ensuing battle, the power liberated by the combatants ignites a combustion that shatters the earth. In the ensuing chaos, the weakest gods are obliterated, rendered down into small fragments of power that contain their being. The stronger ones were able to resist total annihilation, but even their prodigious power cannot save them entirely. As the survivors fell from the broken mountain, the shards of their divinity and the remains of those that did not survive were scattered to the four corners of a now broken world. Choose your god, draft your warband, and take the fight to your enemies with the might of the most powerful beings from a post-apocalypse Greek mythology.
All right, well, let's talk about this game. At its core, what we're dealing with here is a tactical miniatures game, which is something that I know you're very, very familiar with. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a tactical miniatures game that at its core is very, very easy. You take turns going back and forth between players, and you have basically what turns out to two activations in a turn. At the beginning of your turn phase, you're going to draw some cards, and those cards are going to be really important because they're going to dictate what actions you can do. And then you're going to activate one unit and then activate a second unit. And to activate those units, you actually have to discard cards from that unit, which is why you have to draw at the beginning of your turn. And you can only activate units whose cards you've drawn. Now, when you use up all your cards, you do get to shuffle them and create a new deck out of it. But that does give your opponent an opportunity to shuffle all their cards in as well, which gives them full access to their deck as well. Now, every different unit comes with a certain number of cards that can vary from 3 to, I think, 5 or 6. And that can really have a huge impact on how and who you're willing to play at any given time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, at the end of your turn, after you've done your two activations, you get to decide whether or not you want to recall troops. And this is important because at the end of, in its core, what you're trying to do is collect these things called umphalos, which are those husks of the lesser gods that were burned away. And the greater gods are basically trying to absorb those. Only a god can absorb them, and all the other characters can pick them up and move around with them and take them back to the god. And that's why this last stage, if you have the right cards in your hand for it, allows you to recall that unit to you as a god, and then that puts the umphalos a little bit closer to you. Make sense?
Makes sense. So, does everybody actually have... Do you have to pick a god as part of your warband creation, or does... or is it just metaphorically going towards your god, which is like a point on the map?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. At its core, yes, you do have to have a god in your warband. And the reason for that is because the core game is there's a couple of umphalos spread on in the environment, and the first god to absorb 2 out of 3, for instance, is declared the winner.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot more to this game than that very basic description, and it's interesting because when you first learn the game, you're going to get started with the Get Started book, and this is a version of the game with a couple things left out, like terrain rules and whatnot, that let you learn the very essence of the game, that core concept of the beginning phase, taking two activations, and then the end phase. Now, the actions that you can take are separated into two types of actions. You can take a simple action, which is walking, lets you move with movement, and different units have different movement. Attack, which lets you attack a target, and then claim, which lets you claim the umphalos. Now, there's also complex actions. Complex actions are like run, where you move +1, deploy, which lets you bring offboard units back into their deployment zone, and then absorb. And of course, the gods are the only ones that can absorb the umphalos and essentially create a point for themselves in the system.
It seems pretty basic. This is very similar to like D&D combat and even War Machine from what I'm seeing here.
Yes. Now, it does come with some dice, and those dice have some custom icons on them. Basically, the dice mechanic is used primarily for combat, and that actually gives you an opportunity to do exploding dice, which is always fun.
Okay, so I'm looking at these dice, and by the way, I think I should mention I'm looking at a copy of the rulebook, basically. It appears that the dice have... Do they max out at, like, 5?
Yes, there's a 0, a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay, so it's not too far off from a standard D6. You could replace it if you just sort of subtracted 1 in your head from all the various sides, I guess. So how do you resolve a combat, Jonathan?
All right, so resolving a combat's pretty darn easy. The player that's attacking chooses a target, and you have to be within range, and there's all kinds of different ranges, right?
I'm assuming there's a ranged range.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
If you have
there's,
a bow.
There's
I
several
mean,
different ranges, depending on the type of character you have.
And then like, I'm assuming that some fighters can charge in longer distances than others and whatnot.
Exactly. There's okay. Charges... There's aerial attacks, there's units that fly, so they move a little bit differently and they can be harder to hit, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, ranges start at 0, and 0 means that you're in the exact same space. Now, the reason I bring this up is because not all spaces are created equal. When you look at the terrain map, you're going to see numbers in the center of each space, and that tells you how many units can be in any one space.
Oh... And yes. these areas are not uniform. What I'm seeing on this example is they look like a puzzle.
Yeah, like, it does look like a puzzle on the board. And basically, they're not uniform in any way, shape, or form, which makes it kind of interesting, because when you get to different maps, things get a little bit crazy. Now, that's not to say that they're puzzle pieces like a Descent or something like that. What they are is they are a pre-made map that has been divided into a variety of different pieces. That's what looks like a puzzle. And the game ships, I might add, with four maps.
Yeah, and if you have access to, you know, a printer or, heck, even a piece of paper and colored pencils, you could probably easily make your own for expanded stuff that you want to make your own scenarios. Yeah, okay.
Now, every space has that number in the middle, which tells you how many units, of course. But there's also a symbol around that number, and that tells you what kind of terrain type it is. One of the advanced rule sets is actually a terrain function that has an alteration, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, to combat.
Yeah, a lot of that's in the rulebook I'm seeing, because, like, you know, some of the stuff is just, like, it's ground or grass, and some of it's, like, it's forest, it's lava.
Anyway, yeah, when you attack, you choose a target, you make sure they're in range. That target can then declare a guard. So what the guard does is it basically lets you shield weaker units by having a stronger unit absorb the hit.
Standard, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, pretty standard stuff. And then once the guard is either declared or not declared, you resolve the attack, and you do that with the special dice that we were talking about.
From what I'm reading in the rules, stop me if I'm wrong, you determine basically the armor class of the unit, and the armor class is just a static number, and then you just hit on a... You know, if you need a four, you roll all the dice, and whatever rolls four is just considered a success.
Exactly.
And then there's
exactly
something about adding dice together. How does that work?
All right, this is where things get a little more complicated, because whenever you roll a five, you get to do a second roll and then add that to the five.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So that's kind of the exploding dice mechanic. So if you've generated three fives in your first attack, you get to roll three more dice, right? And if those dice come up with a blank, a 2, and a 5, then your results would be 5, 7, and 10.
Oh, wow. That explodes.
Does that make sense? So the second result is added to the first result. And I misspoke just a little bit. Because if you get a blank on the second one, that actually cancels out the original 5 altogether. So you get nothing.
Oh, wow.
So if you roll 3 5s, and then you do second rolls on all of them, and you get a blank, a 2, and a 5... What you're actually looking at is a negated dice result where you get nothing, and then a 7, and then a 10.
All right, so, and wounds in this game seem pretty standard. Like, you know, Zeus and the bigger things, they'll have multitudes of them, but then you could have, you know, units of guys.
But see, that's where things get interesting, Robert, because every single unit has a card on it, and this card has two channels cut out of the center of it. And you put a special selector onto these channels, and as you take wounds, you slide them down, and your effectivity and basically your stats as a unit change as you take damage.
That it's kind of like HeroClix in that regard. As you take damage, you sort of click down, and you know, you become less and less effective, unless your character is the Hulk. I remember the original Hulk actually clicked up, which was fun.
And there's actually characters in this that do the same thing.
Nice. I like it. It's always nice. It's like, should I damage that? And then the units of guys.
There's a lot of additional rules, especially for individual unit types, and every unit plays a little bit differently. That's one of the cool things about it.
And I was reading in the rules the units of guys, instead of taking wounds, like if there's three hoplites, if they take two wounds, just two of the three hoplites die, right?
Yeah. You can think of them as kind of like minions, right? That's what we talk about at the end of it. If you have an activation card for that particular unit, you can actually call back additional units, and they spawn in ready to go.
Oh, okay. That's kind of cool.
But that doesn't work for things like gods and titans. That only works for the lower class units.
Okay. All right. I dig it.
Well, that about covers the basic rules. And then after that, you start getting into kind of like the nitty-gritty rules, if you will. Now, the game comes packaged with a lot of really good stuff. You've got a getting started guide, which gives you a really stripped-down version of the rules that you can learn off of. Then you have the rule book itself, which goes into things like the terrain modifiers and penalties that can come into play, the way different units interact with each other, etc. There's an entire secondary section of the rule book that is just dedicated to giving you more and more depth. And that's what you graduate to after the Getting Started campaign. And then there's also a scenario book. And this is where things get really interesting, because you get a bunch of different scenarios for the exact same map. And it really drastically changes the way you look at a map.
Example.
Okay, so if we look at the first couple pages of the scenario book, we have a skirmish mode for the game. And what it does is it gives you different layouts for the maps that come with the game. There's four maps that ship with it. And each of these layouts is going to work for either two players or three players or four players. So it gives you a basically different tested and balanced versions of that map that work with different player counts. Then the next section of the scenario book gives you special rules. And these special rules are things like villagers and team play, which basically alter the rules even further and give you a unique gameplay power. Now, after that, you start getting into some very specific skirmishes. And these are closer to what we saw in the Conan board game. And these are very specifically tailored and tuned scenarios that are telling chapters of a story.
Oh, okay.
And from there, it's really that's the coolest thing about this game is because it is, in a sense, a rule set, and they're expecting and actually actively encouraging their player base to actually put forward new scenarios.
That is always handy. It also makes future expansions and whatnot easy to make because you can new boards and new maps
and that's exactly what you see in a lot of the expansions. Not only do you get new units, which of course means awesome looking new minis, and there are some amazing ones in this game, but you also get additional scenarios and additional rule sets, etc. One other thing to mention is that there are expansions that actually dive into new rule sets altogether, like the Poseidon expansion, which actually gives you a map that takes place on water and gives you boats and gives you naval combat.
Nice. I like it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so what do you want to know?
What I want to know is, Jonathan, how's that rule book?
The rulebook's fantastic. I didn't really have a big problem with it at all. The Getting Started Guide especially really makes it easy to consume the game.
Any weirdness with the rulebook or looking things up, or is it organized quickly?
So far, it's very straightforward. I've got no complaints from a rules perspective.
So I'm at the Kickstarter page right now, and I'm looking at these miniatures, and they look real good.
Oh my God, this is one of the prettiest games I have ever seen. These miniatures are sublime. They are so well sculpted. The art is phenomenal, and they just come together, and they're dynamic, and they've got great poses, and they just look gorgeous.
Okay. And so these stretch goals were just other expansions that they've added in with new gods and new beasts and...
Yeah, essentially. A lot of the stuff is just expansions that give you new monsters, new gods, new gameplay modes, new scenarios, and occasionally some new things to kind of consider. And it all comes, of course, with your activation cards for the activation phases that you can add into your deck. And the stat card, of course, which lets you keep track of your health and how your stats are affected by taking damage.
Nice. Ooh, the Chimera looks really nice.
Yeah, the Chimera's badass.
Did you get the art book?
Yes, I got the everything.
Nice.
And the cool thing is it actually comes with a compendium, and the first half of the compendium is basically a secondary scenario book with all kinds of new scenarios to play. And then the second half of the compendium is a painting guide.
Oh.
So it urges you to get your guys painted up.
It also says here there was a role-playing game as a stretch goal. Is that
yes,
out
and
yet?
It has not shipped yet, so I really can't tell you much about it because I have not received it yet.
Okay.
But the best part is if you play it, you got all these minis to help you along.
So, Jonathan, where's the board gaming sweet spot for this?
Well, it depends, truly depends on the scenario, because that's one of the things that I've discovered. I've played at 2, 3, and 4 players, and every time I play, it's been a very well-balanced experience. So I think you have to choose the right scenario for the right number of players. Most of them are tuned for 2. But there are 3 and 4 player scenarios available, and they work really well. The 2-player scenarios, yeah, you could shoehorn a couple more players in, but it's not going to work. It's not what it was tuned for, and it's not really fair to hold that against the game, especially when it has so many scenarios that do work for those higher player counts.
But it's one of those games where it's not lying when they say, you know, because a lot of board games, when they say you can play this game with 2 players, they are
lying. Oh, no. This works just as well with 2 players as it does with 3 and 4 because the scenario has been tuned specifically to that player count.
Okay, nice. Here's something I'm curious about. Where does it fall? Because, like, a lot of the language and a lot of the stuff I'm seeing here reminds me of a miniature game or, like, War Machine. more than like a board game, like even like Zombicide. It seems like it's a little
definitely
more...
closer to a miniatures game than it is a board game. But that being said, it's done with a rule set that is highly refined, and it's all about quick back and forth. And so what you end up here is with a tactical miniatures game that has the depth available to give you that tactical miniatures experience should you want it, but it's also accessible enough for a board gamer. In that respect, that's what the tightrope that it really straddles, and it straddles it so elegantly.
Well then, Jonathan, and this is, I think, the final question we always ask, and obviously I don't have a sense of this, so I can't answer it, but is it fun to play?
Oh my gosh, it's so fun. It's so, so fun. It's a great world. It's super beautiful art. You get to play with these awesome miniatures on the table, and the rules are fast. They're lightning fast. You can play so quickly once you get a couple players that know what they're doing together. And I've had a blast every single time I've played. I'm enjoying the living daylights out of this game.
Oh, hey, I thought of a question. Since you said it's a little bit more like a miniatures game more than a board game, shall we say, where does it fall on the spectrum of dice rolling? Do you roll a lot of dice? Do you roll little dice? You know, where is it? Is it
kind of middle of the road?
Kind of middle of the road.
There's a decent amount of dice chucking. But it's not in every phase. It's only in combat.
Compare it to Blood Bowl.
Oh more. My gosh. Yeah. No, so much more dice chucking in Blood Bowl.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay.
Compared to Blood Bowl, this is light. So that's Mythic Battles Pantheon. I really recommend it, and I've been having such a great time with it, and it's just a great scenario-based tactical miniatures experience. But it again, like we were talking about when we were chatting, it's accessible for the board gamer, and I really can't recommend this one highly enough. I'm really having just an absolute blast with it. So for more details on the game, definitely go to the Mythic Games website, where you can find all the information on the game and how to get it if it's available. It was a Kickstarter, so I don't know what their distribution plans are moving forward, but this game is phenomenal. It's worth actively chasing down.
And, you know, put yourself on the mailing list if they, you know, ever do a Gloomhaven and reprint it. Probably a good time to pick it up.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive of Mythic Battles Pantheon. And, of course, that sadly means that we are at the end of episode 33 of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Once again, we invite you to join us on all of our digital domains. We love to hear from you. We love it when you guys participate in the discussion. And honestly, our Facebook group has become the most active.
Yeah. I'm digging our Facebook group. I'm having a lot of fun.
Yeah. Howdy to the Facebook world.
Ray actually asked us if we've been listening to any audiobooks. Sadly, I have not. I haven't listened to a podcast.
I need to make time for that, because I had a lot of fun with Ray's book, actually.
I had a lot of fun. I agree. I haven't even listened to another podcast in 2 weeks. The last time I listened to a podcast was when I listened to ours to hear the thing I said that I was listening for that now I've forgotten.
Now you have to go back and listen to the Jedi talk.
Yeah, that was it. I meant to go back and listen to the Jedi talk. Yeah. But then I listened to the wrong episode. So yeah, but that was the only podcast I listened to, and that was a week and a half ago. So cause I don't do much driving right now. So, and then I did some driving today, but I had my kid in the car, so we were just talking about random nonsense, and it was amazing.
Well, we will be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast, episode 34, coming in about 2 weeks from today. But for now, Robert, any final thoughts?
At Forgot My Dice, at Stronghold Games, hashtag FMD Contest. What is the monster you want in your Poke Battle? Win a copy of Space Freaks. Do it.
Which, by the way, is getting phenomenal, phenomenal reviews.
Yeah, yes it is. So, yeah, do that. You can enter twice. Double your chances of winning. Cutoff is next episode. We'll announce the winner of the episode after that. Make sure you enter twice. Get both times. It's easy. Just do it. Go, now.
Well, all right then, Robert. Thank you for your final thoughts. And as always,
Whoa, is that the wind?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Oh, my gosh.
It's
don't
nuts.
Die.
It's
don't
absolutely die. Nuts. The 2 or 3 hours that we've been recording, I have been listening to the weather turn. The winds come up about 30 to 40 miles an hour. The rain's just coming down kind of sideways now. And we're expected to freeze, which means we're going to be encased in ice very soon.
All right, well, let's wrap this up before the power dies.
As always, Robert, party on.
Party on, Jonathan.
Party on and stay hot.
Yeah.
Good night, everybody. music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elephiel and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.